This is the Courier Talking Football. I'm Eric Nicholson, and with me this week are Jim Spence and Ian Roach. Well, gentlemen, another week, and we still don't have a Dundee United manager. No room to panic, I don't think. There's still no fixture list out, and you know, there have been managerial hunts that have gone on a lot longer than this. I think we're at day 12 as we record this, but there's a couple of we've still not got a definitive name on who it's going to be, that's for sure. But the latest would appear to be that according to Tony Ashgar, don't expect an appointment till the start of next week, which will take us into a third week. And he seems to have broadened things out a wee bit. We kind of thought that we were maybe going to be getting Steve McLaren for a while there, Malky Mackay before him, and now Mickey Mellon's name, Ian, is the name that seems to be at the forefront. Can you update us on that one?
Well, yeah, United have asked for permission to speak to Mr. Mellon. Mickey Mellon, it's a good name, isn't it? Great for the headline writers. So United have approached the club down there for permission to speak to him. So he seems like a genuine candidate. He'll go and get an interview now. But we're talking, I think Tony Ashgar is now talking about 20 candidates possibly. Now, you could say, if you're being kind, you say, well, that's casting the net wide and looking at your options. Or you can be not so kind and say, it doesn't really quite look like the strategy is working here. I don't know what Jim's thoughts are on that, but I'm getting to be just a wee bit concerned. When it goes into the third week, I think you're really looking for a line to be drawn under it and for it to be finalised.
Jim, do you think does it feel like we're getting closer?
Well, by dint of the fact that time has passed, Eric, we must be closer. We must be closer than we were, 12 days ago or whatever it was now. I think Dundee United fans need some kind of clarity. I've seen some of the statements coming out of Tannadice. You will know, of course, that my position in life is not to be cynical, but to be sceptical of anything I hear from football people now, So, I mean, it depends on the combination of things. Yeah, well, only in my own mind. It depends. I mean, I know that United had a kind of view on the type of coach they want, and they're saying that there's been a big diversity of people who have applied. But for a moment, it seemed that Malky Mackay was a red-hot favourite. And I know that some people in Malky's camp thought there was no impediment to him getting the job. They thought it was quite close. So, I would work on the basis that I know there are concerns in and around Tannadice, which may have been fed to Mark Ogren over Malky's previous baggage, which still seems to live with him. Maybe that's put them off Malky, although there are suggestions that he's still on the list, and he would be a good candidate. I just don't know is the answer. I don't know what United are looking for. Are they looking for experience? Are they looking for youth? Are they looking for someone to work hand in hand with the sporting director, or maybe that relationship to loosen off a wee bit? I don't know, and I'm not entirely convinced they know themselves.
Do you see a common thread with the names that we're getting and the names that people have spoken to? I mean, should they be? Because of the it is a different, we're constantly told, oh, it's not manager, it's head coach. Should they be focusing on a specific type? And do you think they've been focusing on a specific type, Jim? Or do you think they're kind of looking at different sort of managers, coaches?
Well, they've said themselves. I mean, Tony Ashgar in a statement that the club put out had said that we need to know who fits this club. We have clear criteria about what we're looking for. Since Mark Ogren came in 18 months ago, we've built a momentum. We want to keep that going. So if they have clear criteria, that would indicate that the people that they have approached, because, this works two ways. A club always, through a sporting director or a chairman or whatever, and in United's case it'll be a sporting director, will approach people that they think suit and fit the criteria. And in the meantime, people will apply for the job by letter or by agent phone calls and all the rest, and the club will decide whether those people are worth interviewing on the basis that they fit the criteria or that the criteria might be slightly amended depending on the quality of that candidate. Now, any, you know, I mean, there's a great phrase in the army, isn't there, that no battle plan survives first contact with the enemy. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you're in football management, I think you have to embrace that as well. It's all very well having a philosophy. It's kind of like having a philosophy of play. And then you become manager of a football club and you actually realise that, you know, that your midfielders need three touches where other midfielders need two touches to control and pass the ball. Then you have to adapt. And similarly, it's all very well saying we have a philosophy of how we want this to work, the managerial structure. But it may well be that you don't have sufficiently decent candidates coming forward to fit into that. Because remember, there's massive pressure here. Dundee United fans will not be expecting Dundee United to go up to the Premiership and return straight back down. The expectation is that the club will survive in the Premiership. So you've got to get someone who's capable of doing that. And the greater expectation will be that Dundee United, a club with a great pedigree and history, will do much better than survive. You know, we'll be looking perhaps for a top six. I mean, that's maybe a bit ambitious in the first season. So there's all of these things to throw into the melting pot. And along with that go the fact that this will be the first managerial appointment that Tony Asgard as sporting director and Mark Ogren as owner of the club have made. And the pressure to get it right is absolutely huge. And therefore, they're probably right to take their time in making sure that they get the right man. Because even in making sure that you get the right man doesn't necessarily mean you will. It wouldn't be the first time, you know, that a top manager has been appointed and it turns out to have been a disaster. So I can understand, I think, the nervousness, the reluctance to put their finger on the trigger and pull the gun here, but they are going to have to do it very, very soon indeed.
Ian, my thoughts on it so far, seeing the names that have been mentioned and the names that have been interviewed, is that the traditional manager, as we would, you know, of usually think of a manager, the names who fit that category have been more impressive than the ones that would maybe fit the sort of new school head coach. Would that be a fair assessment? Because you've got guys of the caliber of Steve McLaren and Malky Mackay. Let's put the Malky Mackay texting stuff to one side. These are seriously impressive football managers, aren't they?
Yeah,
with guys that have. I mean, one's been an England manager. The other's done incredibly well with Cardiff City down south as well. And then perhaps you're looking at guys like Austin McPhee, John Daly, who are either untried or unproven.
Yes, to me, there's a big gap in the middle there. And what I think, you were speaking about, are United going for an up-and-coming coach or an experienced kind of older guy? To me, it looks like they're going for both, quite frankly. they're trying to play two hands here because you've got a bunch of candidates that are towards the former and a bunch of candidates towards the latter. Mm-hmm. And there does seem to be a gap in the middle. For example, just take Mackay. You know, he's been interviewed. We know that. John Daly's also been interviewed. They're quite different types. So that to me is a concern because it looks as if you're sitting down with a strategy to follow, how come you're kind of going in such diverse directions? That is a little bit of a concern to me.
Well, that's where my theory is. And again, it's just you know, this isn't with any inside knowledge. That's where my theory is that the guys that they probably want, the types that they probably want to fill the role, have maybe not been impressing them as much as the ones of the old school variety. Because, you know, Steve, they were pretty far down the road with Steve McLaren, and Steve McLaren is a manager, isn't he? He's not head coach. He was maybe a head coach when he started out, but he's now a 59-year-old guy that's been manager of England. He's a manager, isn't he?
Yeah, and it was a concrete attempt to get him. Let's not beat about the bush here. We had Tony Asgard actually spoke to Steve McLaren. It was quite far down the road. McLaren then gave out reasons for
Anik, apparently.
Coming, but I mean this was a bona fide attempt. This was a bona fide attempt by United to get somebody who is, you know, okay, he's had the Wally with the Brawley stuff and that, but let's talking purely football, I mean, United, he would have been one of the best candidates. I think it was you said that, Eric, you know, almost one of the best candidates for the job for decades.
Oh, I said he's got the best CV since Jim McLean. I don't think you can argue with that, can you?
No, you can't. So therefore, well done to United for trying to get him. It didn't work out. But he's obviously in the experienced, you know, been there, done it, kind of let's go up to the Premiership with a experienced head here. And then they're also kind of playing this other option here, which is the young up and coming. I mean, how do you go? My point is, how do you go from almost, you know, getting close with McLaren to then saying, well, here's Austin McPhee, who for all he's, you know, I think he's a very talented coach. So what I've heard. But how do you go? Well, then this is who we've got now. We did try for McLaren, but here's Austin McPhee for you lads. It's a difficult sell.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally see that point. I mean, listen, do we ultimately, is it us, is it people in the media who get more hung up on the process, Jim, because we're living it, reporting on it, you know, speaking to people, than fans? Do people only really retrace the steps if this goes wrong?
Well, I mean, you know, the essential difference between, you know, a supporter and a journalist, I suppose, quite bluntly, Eric, is that we have access to speak to the people, presuming they'll take our calls, and that we have access to speak to the people who, you know, are in the position of handing the job out and interviewing, and the position, you know, the people who are in the position of looking for the job. And we all do that. And sometimes we report on these things, sometimes we don't. Sometimes, you know, we speak to people and we are, you know, we accept that, you know, much is off the record and all the rest of it.
Yeah, just building up a knowledge base about it.
Building up a knowledge base of what's going on, how serious it is, what's being looked for and all the rest of it. I mean, we all do that, and we've all done it in this situation. Fans just want the appointment. They want to talk about it. They want to talk about it, not in the pubs and clubs at the moment, but they want to talk about it, you know, and chew the fat on social media sites and all the rest of it, who they fancy, who they don't fancy, what they think of candidate A and candidate B. But the process is important. The danger is the process can get away from you very quickly here. Now, there are signs that the process, and I've already said I don't blame United for being, you know, for taking their time on this one, because it's a big, big appointment. But there are dangers that the process gets away from you, and it starts to become, starts to look unwieldy, and it starts to look unmanageable. And it starts to look kind of vaguely as though there's a touch of the pig's ear about it. I mean, for instance, we've talked about the breadth, Ian's right there, the breadth of candidate that United appear to be interested in and have talked to, irrespective of how seriously or not that, you know, these conversations have gone, would indicate to me that if they've done all of that, why did they not pursue somebody like Tommy Wright, who has done a tremendous job at St Johnstone, is currently available, had, you know, won the Scottish Cup at a club with, you know, with fewer resources, smaller support, and consistently had St Johnstone performing or outperforming, as many people would say. Why was he not in the frame, you know? There are all of these questions, I think, there. And now, that's not me saying by any manner of means that Tommy Wright was the man for the job. I think he'd have done a very good job. I think there's others who would also do a very good job, very probably a Malky Mackay or a Steve McLaren among them. I have to say, I'm sceptical about the Steve McLaren thing. I think it suits two parties here. I think it suits United to have been linked with a man as with such a reputation, and it does Steve no harm either to, you know, to have his name thrown back in the ring, because when you're out of football for a while, people forget that you exist, you know. So in that respect, it did no party either harm. Fair play to United for pursuing it. I have to say, I always thought it was a very, very long shot indeed, and so it's proven. But I think that, you know, we come back to that situation we've got at the minute. You know, United were left in a situation with you know, where Robbie Nielsen, and I'm still sceptical too about the Nielsen thing. Was Nielsen approached by someone, or did someone on behalf of Nielsen approach someone else saying, you know, he's available, he wants out? All, you know, the whole situation, the whole managerial situation at Tannadice is clouded and kind of mystery at the moment, both as to why the manager went and how long it's taking to appoint a new one.
Ellie, and let's talk Mickey Mellon. It's because he's an intriguing character, mostly because he's not a familiar name in Scottish football, although, you know, he is very much, he's a Scot. He, correct me if I'm wrong, he left Scott Paisley at about 17 years old, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Played for
yep.
Bristol City. Had a decent sort of lower league career by the look of it. You know, he went for a few quid here and there. Plenty, you know, his playing career lasted long enough. Then we go into his management career, and he's got a few, I think he's got four promotions to his name, is that right?
He does, yeah, yeah. Some as titles, some as playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. And but intriguingly, there was what caught my eye was he was a youth coach at Burnley at the same time as he was managing Fleetwood, who Fleetwood were a non-league club at the time, and you know he's been a huge part of their history in getting them into the main leagues down south. So it's a guy that has been a real training ground coach. That's for sure. And then I think he's very well thought of at Tranmere. They sort of managed to get themselves back in the Football League, and you know I think they were one of the we kind of get caught up in our the Hearts, Partick Thistles, and all the rest of it up here. But Tranmere were one of the big,
yeah,
one of the real unlucky ones down south, weren't they? Because they were building up a head of steam to get out of danger, and then they suffered with points per game. So he's a guy who's built up a good reputation in the English lower leagues, but totally untried in his homeland.
Yeah, he is. I think what would endear him to us all is apparently he's still got a really broad Scottish accent, even though he's been down there for a few years. I think it all adds up to him serving a real apprenticeship in coaching.
Yeah.
And then there's one of achievement. You know, there's one of achievement. Again, I think Jim will agree with this. So up here, you look at teams like, say, you know, a Shrewsbury or something like that. But they've all got nice wee setups there, and you know, a reasonably good size of support. So it's
Shrewsbury could probably outbid. They could outbid a lot of, you know,
that's right.
A lot of our
that's right. And
Premiership teams when it comes to buying players, you know.
Tranmere again, you know, a big area to call upon. So I think what we can say about him is that he has done. He's done a real apprenticeship and then moved on and then been a coach in his own right, and he's been successful at his level. So there's something there. There is something there. However, again, I did a piece of pros and cons. The one for him is he's never managed in Scotland. I take it as a Paisley guy, he'll be aware of football up here and what's been happening. But does he know, you know, the nitty gritty of who plays for, you know, second left back for St Mirren, etc., or Hamilton, that kind of thing? So he would need to get himself quickly up to date with the top flight, also United as well. So he would have to pick who's coming with him very carefully as well. So this thing about it going into the third week, it does concern me, because we're now under a month until the scheduled start of the Premiership, and really, I think the players are entitled to be looking at their manager on the training park.
Yeah, Jim, what's your thoughts on Mickey Mellon? And I mean, would it be a big gamble?
I think it's undoubtedly a gamble. I mean, any manager's a gamble, but I suspect that some managers are more of a gamble than others. I mean, he's got almost 500 playing appearances in English football, and you know, in terms of the kind of, you know, looking at United with the history and the pedigree, and you don't want to be a snob about this, but the history and the pedigree that Dundee United have in terms of where they've been, you know, would be far and away above the kind of clubs that he's been involved in and managed, you know. I wouldn't want to follow, putting my rector's hat on for a moment, I wouldn't want to follow the vice president of the student executive, who's a big Tranmere fan. Tranmere, of course, have just been relegated, haven't they, down there. I think there is, you know, you speak to various people in the game, I've spoken to a few various agents and others in the game, and they will make a lot of this, that, you know, he's been away, like a lot of Scots used to do, way down to English football, as a boy, basically, and really doesn't know the game, doesn't know the ins and outs and the contacts and the youth football setup and all the rest of it here. But there's always people to help you do that, you know. I mean, yeah. Dundee United have got a good youth setup. They've got people there, not only Tony, the sporting director. They've got people right throughout, like Brian Grant and all the rest of it, who will know the game inside out and have contact inside out. So, kind of less concerned about that than, you know, than how he manages and how he coaches and how he gets on with players. I mean, I think Ian was right earlier on that United appear to be looking for a combination of everything, which is ideal. You're looking for somebody with experience, and he's 48, so, you know, he's been around the block. He knows his way around the block. I mean, you're looking for somebody with kind of a bit of youthfulness and a bit of vigour and all the rest of it as well. But ultimately, you're looking for someone who can manage men and coach men. That's the deal. Can he do it at the level that he will be operating here, where he's coming up against Celtic, Rangers, Aberdeen, Hibernian, etc.? That is the big test. And the bottom line is, we don't know.
Yeah, like you say, is it a gamble to take a guy out of the English lower leagues who's no experience to managing in Scotland? Is it a gamble that United need to take, Ian? That's kind of the crux of it, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is, because in my opinion, this is purely my opinion, they didn't try hard enough to get someone like Tommy Wright. They should have been approaching him as their number one candidate and asked him, you know, what changes would you like?
They didn't try at all, have they? They've not approached him at all.
No, which is quite strange, really, to be honest. But you'd be looking at him and you would be saying, you know, what do you want to happen at Tannadice? How would you see it working? And then you can maybe think, we can maybe change to accommodate you a bit here, Tommy. But that hasn't happened, and that's strange. That's an elephant in the room for me, it really is. I think Tommy would have been both my candidate and preferred candidate. I think Jim said that as well. Right at the start of all this, but no, they don't have to take a gamble. They don't, and it's we'll see what happens over the next few days. But they're going to be going into Monday now. We might get an appointment on Monday, but that's when the fixture lists come out. So you're going to be talking about United playing, say they're going to play in Hibs first game, for example. You don't know who the manager's going to be. I think it's getting tight now. It is getting tight, and I would like this sorted out as soon as possible.
Yeah, just to wrap it up then, Jim. I mean, gut instincts are very hard in a situation like this when you don't know all the information, and basically, you know, it's going to come down to one man, Tony Ashton, and with the approval of Mark Ogren, obviously, as well. Do you think we're getting close to the end game, and that Mickey Mallon is the likely man? Or do you think there's a couple more twists to go left?
I don't know. I mean, I'm told that Tony and Mickey know each other from way back. But then Tony, you know, he's been an agent for a while. He will know people throughout the game. You know, he knew Steve McLaren. He'll know Malky. He'll know everybody. You know, I mean, that's how it works. It's no different from you and I as journalists. We've got contacts. But I mean, I was having a look today. I've got 2,000 numbers on my iPhone. You know, we all know people. It's making that big decision. I mean, a decision's got to be made very, very soon. It's got to be made, I'd have thought, by Monday evening at the latest, to get the new manager in. And as Ian says, to start working with the players, to impart what he wants, the type of philosophy he wants, not just in playing, but, you know, behaviour off field, everything, you know, social media behaviour, the whole kit and caboodle kind of thing. But whether it's Mickey Mellon or not, I don't know. Only Tony Asgard and Mark Ogren will know that.
Well, we can move on to Dundee now, and their worries are all of a or of a different type just now. I think it was about this time last week that the news came out about the wage cuts for the players, and Jimmy Nicol losing his job, sports scientist, and we probably fear there's more bad news down the track. We're used to talking about Dundee money issues, and this one's obviously of a totally different variety. But Jim, on the grimometer, where are we placing this one, and or how worried are you about the next few weeks and months at Dens?
Oh, I think it's obviously quite alarming when, you know, the minute you start to, we know that from the statements that Dundee themselves have made, you know, my suspicion, I'd actually started to write my column on this last week, and I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to seem like the spectre at the feast, and my oldest boy, as most people know, went right through, I think, 6-7 years of the Dens Park youth system until he is 19. So I would hate to see cuts to youth system, but my suspicion is that something will be done there, just as Hibs have put theirs into, you know, cold storage for 4 months. My suspicion is that if you're going to make cuts, you can only make them so far with the first team. The first team is the fulcrum of every football club. The first, you know, people don't turn out to see the under 21s or the youth system. They love having these things, but ultimately what you must preserve at a professional football club is the first team. So, you know, you may well have to make cuts here and some quite hefty ones, but ultimately, if you've got to make quite severe cuts, and it sounds as though Dundee do, those cuts must come further down the line. And that would be my suspicion, that the youth setup, the youth academy, the pro youth setup may well be hit quite hard here. And that's a pretty depressing situation, because, you know, I think you do one of two things in professional football. And I remember Stephen Thompson contemplated this, the Brentford approach, when he was in charge at Dundee United. You either put the money in big time, as Dundee United are doing currently too, your academy system, and you go for broke, and you hope that you produce the diamonds, or frankly, you almost do away with it completely, and you look to pick up players here, there, and everywhere that other people have produced. And I kind of wait with bated breath to see what Dundee are going to do here. But I think the position at Dens at the moment does look quite alarming.
Yeah, that's still got to play out fully, Ian. But what we do know is that, you know, there are players that have been offered, I say, it's probably not the best term, but, you know, substantial pay cuts, of which a couple of them have already accepted them. You know, there's a whole lot more that will have to make up their minds. It's totally changing the dynamic ahead of the new season for Dundee, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I interviewed manager James McPeak earlier this week. And, you know, before these interviews, I was looking at my list of questions, and they were all negative ones. But what could you do? You know, you have to ask these things. And it was a shame. Right. But I think a concern for me is that I really feel for McPeak, because it's the uncertainty. He doesn't know who's going to be staying and who's going to be going. That's the thing.
Right.
How can a manager plan ahead like that? It's really difficult for him. Some nuggets of good news, as you say, you know, likes of Paul McGowan, etc., accepting the terms. But he's lost his captain, Josh Meekins, and his assistant manager, Jimmy Nicol, in the space of a few days. It was Friday, and then it really was just a few days. So that doesn't happen to a manager every day. It's difficult to deal with these things. And I think, you know, James McPeak to me seems like a guy that's got a real kind of social conscious about him as well. So to have this happening with people leaving and possibly, you know, not being able to accept new terms because of whatever reason, I think it's a challenge for him. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying that. So there's just a cloud there just now. And I hope that it kind of, you know, more and more, his squad starts to get formalised a wee bit more. Because it's open-ended just now. I mean, who are Dundee's players going to be? Can we anybody predict within a week from now, 2 weeks from now? We don't know.
I know. Well, that's the thing, Jim. I mean, we spoke on here a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of times actually, when we were kind of looking at who they were going to be up against in the Championship, thinking, you know, probably Hearts, we would still say that. But one of the things that Dundee had in their favour was that they were starting to get the team together in those last couple of months of last season. It feels like a million years ago, but things were, you could start to pick Dundee's best 11. You could start to see who was finding their feet in their proper positions. You know, likes of Sean Byrne, and, you know, the centre halves were looking good. There were hope of getting Callaghan back in for next season. All of a sudden, they looked like they would be able to, they could be beneficiaries of a bit of stability for a change going into the start of the next season, maybe catching Hearts off guard and getting off to a fast start.
I think
now, as Ian says, all the balls are up in the air again.
Yeah, James McPeak is having to spin so many plates in the air at the moment. I mean, you know, the word you use there, stability, is key. I mean, you know, football, to those of us on the outside, you know, you look at the life of a professional football player and you think, oh, fantastic, paid every day to do what you want, play football, blah, blah, blah. But it's also a life that, it's a bit like, you know, when I used to teach contract law, I used to say kind of 9/10 of a contract are under the surface like an iceberg, and football's like that. You know, football players are like the rest of us. They've got worries about mortgage, about relationships, about their own, their mental health, you know, and a whole combination of things. So these are really uncertain times for guys, not just at Dens Park, but, you know, but because we're talking about Dundee at the moment, for the pros at Dens, and they're getting asked to take kind of wage cuts, in some cases pretty substantial ones, and people live to their means. You know, they will have mortgages and car deals and all the rest of it, which tie in with the money they earn, never having expected this to happen. So all of a sudden, you've got fragility built into the place. They're watching one or two guys in the club leaving the club, guys like Jimmy Nicol leaving the club. They'll be sitting thinking, what comes next? Might I be next? You know, watching potential for the academy, youth academy being disrupted. All of that leads to disruption. In the meantime, James, who's a young manager, you know, he's really in his infancy in terms of managing, you know, men, is having to deal with all of this. And he's having to develop the skills of a UN diplomat and trying not to pin the blame on Tim Keyes and John Nelms, because there's really no blame to be apportioned here. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's the issue. I mean, it's not like you can say the owner or the managing director are playing nasty here. What they're doing is they're having to simply, they're having to manage, you know, a situation that none of us could have seen coming, a global pandemic, which has left clubs all over the country. And we've seen Wigan going into administration this week, and there'll be other English ones to follow. We've seen clubs having not just reduced income, but almost no income, and still faced with hefty outgoings. So, you know, he's found himself in the middle of almost the perfect storm, the wrong kind of storm. He's having to spin all of these plates in the air. It's probably a bigger test of him as a manager than anything he's had to face actually putting the team on the pitch.
Yeah, the one that kind of brought it home to me and was through the week there when Ross Callaghan signed for Hamilton. Now, obviously, Hamilton in the top flight, but, I mean, everything, in normal circumstances, everything pointed to Callaghan becoming a Dundee player. McPaik had seen in plenty of, had seen enough that he liked about him before he broke his leg. He loved it at Dens. Money wise, it wouldn't have been a hard deal for them to do probably, but circumstances have changed and Dundee couldn't get him. Now you're thinking, gosh, if Dundee were losing out to and getting one like that, which is one that we all thought would just happen. It was a 2 + 2 = 4. You're thinking, gosh, what is James going to be able to do in the next couple of months before their season starts in October? You know.
Yeah. Well, it goes without saying. I hope it improves for both Dundee and McPaik on that. There will be a time where he'll be able to start building towards the new season, but it's certainly not now. Yeah. I mean, Callaghan, I think we were all expecting it. He would be number one on the list of players you thought would, you know, Dundee would be. You know, he would be there next season, but he's off to Hamilton. Hamilton, you know, with respect, they're not big players, so I think Dundee could have competed for that, but it turns out no. What we've got is we've got a ripping up of the old way at Dens, and we've now got a coronavirus affected new way. And the money being offered just isn't going to be the same. They won't be alone, by the way, and they aren't alone. We know that. There's a lot of other clubs facing similar challenges. It'll be right across Scottish football. But there's a lot of bad news affecting Dundee at the moment. It all seems to be coming within a short space of time. I mean, we had the John Nelms asking for the season tickets to be bought as well, and I think there's a lot of supporters have reacted positively. I think that I heard that the shop's been going well. So that's a good sign. You know, it really seems bleak for Dundee, but they've got a good manager in charge there and someone who'll work really hard to get things sorted out in time as best he can for this supposed October start.
And meanwhile, Jim, you know, obviously there's the confusion with Hearts with the court case and all the rest of it, but it's not stopping them putting things in place for next year, is it? Obviously, Robbie Nielsen, he'll be a formidable manager in the Championship if that's where they are, because, you know, it's obvious he's just taking a team to the title. Yeah. And they're signing a Scotland goalkeeper of not that long ago. You know, he still has ambitions to get back in the Scotland team, you know, Craig Gordon. So you can see them putting down some proper building blocks for next season, and you know it wouldn't surprise you. I know Rab Douglas wrote in his column that he would now expect it's a double dunt for Dundee, because he would now expect Craig Whiting to stay at Hearts, because Robbie, he said Whiting played particularly well for Arbroath against
United,
and he seems to be coming back. You know, he's one that would have been a natural one that Dundee would have looked to have got again, and he thinks that Christoph Berra we'll be back there again. That was another one that Dundee would have probably wanted to get back. So you kind of you're kind of all of a sudden thinking, you know, I think, again, to quote Rab, I think he said that the sort of the gap in terms of financial clout between Hearts and Dundee would be bigger than the gap even last season between Dundee and United.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you know, we don't know the outcome of the court case, whether this will be flung back to the SFA for arbitration or what will happen here. But, you know, speaking...
This is a Friday lunchtime recording.
That's right. As of Friday lunchtime or dinner time, as I still prefer to call it, being a Dundee chill, you know. I mean, speaking as we are right at the moment, if Hearts are to be in the Championship, there is no doubt they will be vastly better resourced than Dundee are. I mean, for starters, they will be probably the third, maybe the fourth. I know Hibs have sold about 9,500 season books, but normally Hearts are just a fraction ahead of them. There's not much between the two of them, but they will be either the third or fourth biggest season book base in Scotland. And then on top of that, you've got my suspicions are that the philanthropist James Anderson, who's been putting money in to help various clubs in Scotland, is a big Hearts man as well. And my suspicion is he may be chucking a couple of bob into the Hearts kitty as well. So whatever happens, Hearts are going to be much, much better resourced. Craig Gordon isn't going to Hearts for peanuts. I know he's made his money. I know he's taken a big hit by comparison to what he's on at Parkhead, but he'll still be on very big money. I see Hearts as being massively resourced by comparison to Dundee and every other club in the Championship, if that's where they begin next season.
But can I just interrupt here? Hearts surely were making wage cuts not so long ago.
Oh, no.
And also they're going to lose 8 million by being in the Championship. So how does all this add up? That's not the
There's a few things that, school. I mean, we're going off topic, but no, I agree with you, and it doesn't sit well with me. No. Neither does the prospect of Hibs picking up Dre Wright or signing anybody for that matter while they're you know, going through what they're going through, you know. But it seems these things have all seemed to just get forgotten about over the passing of time. But you know, you're right, Ian. But just before we leave the Championship, very impressive couple of early signings for Dunfermline. I thought that's put down a real marker. Getting Paul Watson, who would have been a good, I think we said it on here, would have been a very good signing for Dundee. Even, you know, forget his United connections. That's not stopped players from crossing the Great Divide over the years. And Stephen Whittaker. So they've put down a good marker. And I think, you know, Dunfermline are seeing, it's obviously it's the COVID situation, but Dunfermline are well used to a sort of rip it up and start again. Some are, aren't they? Because they did it last year, and I think they did the one before. So, you know, they're kind of in a rhythm of that sort of team building, aren't they?
Two good signings, Eric. I agree with you. And I think the interesting thing here is we're looking at a truncated season. Mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at a 27-game season. I'm still unsure, I have to say, as to where that third game's going to be played. Are they going to toss a coin for it or something? I don't know, you know. But, I mean, we're looking at a shortened season. Now, that potentially can make a big, big difference to the season. If you're off to a flyer, you're in pole position and psychologically does other clubs in. And that's where I take a wee bit of rain check and what I said in Hearts. Hearts will be massively resourced by comparison to everyone else. But that truncated season might change things dramatically. I mean, it doesn't matter how well resourced you are. It wouldn't be the first time a club has spent a fortune. Never mind the morality, as you say, what's been going on with wage cuts and all the rest of it, and players out the door and claiming big debts. The truth is that, you know, if you get off to, let's say, the first five or six and you have a stinker and you end up with about 4 points, then that truncated season might mean that, well, for all the resources, the others come at the fore. And Arbroath, for instance, you know. Mm-hmm. An intriguing season, I think, lying ahead in the Championship with that shortened season.
Well, Ian, we'll have plenty of time to build up to it, but just to finish off talking of truncated seasons, it's good news that League One are going to follow along similar lines to the Championship, and at the time of League Two haven't yet decided, but we're hoping they'll do the same. You know, you can't get away from it, though. It is a gamble, I would imagine. Had there not been a couple of full-time teams in League One, it might have been a you know, an even harder decision for them to make. But, you know, there's a lot of pressure for, you know, Partick Thistle and Falkirk to be able to play football, you know, given their status and their everything, that, you know, all their infrastructure and overheads and all the rest of it, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most interesting reads of the week, the past week for me, was a Forfar board statement. And they laid out in brilliant, you know, if stark language, just how difficult a decision it was for them to agree to October 17. And they're on a risk of, there is a real risk.
Oh, they do.
Of, you know, playing games without any hospitality and fans in the stadium. Mm-hmm. And also the costs of getting testing done. It's they said it was one of the, or I think it was the, toughest decision they'll ever take, a Forfar board they'll ever take. So that's that. When people are talking like that, you often really take notice. I thought it was an excellent presentation of how challenging it is to be involved in making decisions at a football club just now.
Aye, and the knife edge they're on as well. I mean, Nicola Sturgeon's, you know, latest comments about, I think we were kind of all hoping that maybe fans were going to come back a bit sooner than we'd feared and all the rest of it, but she's delivered a bit of a custard pie at that one, hasn't she? And, you know, all it takes is it to get delayed for a month or two, and, you know, also, you know, all of a sudden, you know, paying for the test and we get nobody through the gate suddenly becomes, you know, we're starting to get into dangerous territory, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the problem here, Eric, is we're all speculating. You know, I mean, who knows? In a month's time, 6 weeks' time, you know, Oxford University or something might find that the human guinea pigs, that the vaccine is remarkable, you know, they've been trialling, works remarkably well. They might find out.
You've not got Dundee Uni's doing it, Jim.
Dundee Uni are heavily involved as well, but I know that, you know, that Oxford were kind of, you know, were the first off the starting blocks in terms of, you know, publicity and all the rest of it. But I think, you know, there are many universities throughout the world working on this and labs and all the rest of it. We just don't know. We don't know where we will be. So we might find people are back in grounds quicker. We might find that they're not back in for months and months and months and months. And you don't want to be alarmist, but the dangers to football clubs are absolutely staring you in the face here. I mean, I saw the figures the other day for the English Championship. The figures are horrendous. You've got some clubs that are paying out for every 100 quid they take in, there are clubs paying at 150, 160, 175 quid, I think, in one case. I think it was Aston Villa. Absolutely horrendous. You know, you can just imagine. And those are clubs with some TV income, albeit in the Championship. In Scotland, different kettle of fish. Everything's relative, we know that. But still clubs with costs, with money going out, and next to nothing coming in, not just through the gates. Lack of, you know, sponsorship dries up, hospitality dries up. Places like Forfar and all the rest of it, these are crucial elements in keeping the club afloat. So these are really, really worrying times.
Yeah, so good stuff this week, gents, and hopefully this time next, well, it might not be this time next week, it might be earlier next week. Once we've got a Dundee United manager, you never know, it could be at the start of next week, and then we can put a bit more meat on the bones on that one. Anyway, thanks, guys, and thank you very much for listening again. Thank you.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people to find Talking Football, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget, too, to pick up your copy of The Courier Monday to Saturday, or go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe. to find out how to get our award-winning sport, business and local journalism across Tayside and Fife in the way that's right for you. The Courier. Local matters.